All right, so the World Series is going on. Do we have any baseball fans in here? They're all on the right side. They've all kind of congregated together. That's awesome. Any specifically Houston Astro fans? Woo! Tied it up, man. It didn't look good those first two games, but they tied it back up. I love me some baseball. My love has kind of waned a little bit in the last few years just because when you become a parent, you only have so much energy, and that's all gone to football. So love me some football. I still love baseball. I just don't have enough time to stick up with it as much as I'd like to. But I enjoy the game. I played it in high school and as a kid. Loved it. Broke my arm playing baseball in the house while we were watching the Blue Jays in the World Series back when I was in third grade. And man, like when you're playing baseball, there's very few things in life that are as awesome as hitting a home run. Like it's just awesome. So if you played baseball, and especially if you're playing with when they're throwing a little harder, if you hit the ball, like you feel the bat vibrate. Right, the bat vibrates. It kind of hurts sometimes, especially if you don't hit it exactly right. The bat will vibrate in your hands, and it hurts really bad. But there are times when you hit a home run, where you hit it, and you hit it right on the barrel of the bat, the exact sweet spot where you're supposed to hit it. There have been a few times where I've been able to do that. And when you make contact like that, it feels like you're just swinging through air. Like you crush the ball. The ball like doesn't even, you don't feel the vibration at all. You just right through. And there's very few things in life where you get to feel that level of awesome. I just killed that ball. I absolutely hit it exactly right. So back in the day, back in 2005, I was watching some baseball. And man, this just made me love some baseball some more. So I'm ready, Bennett, if you can get this video up. So don't play it yet. Hey, go ahead and pause it for me here. All right, here's the scenario. I'm sorry, Astros fans. I'm sorry. This is just when it happened. So this is back in 2005. And this is the Cardinals. They're playing the Astros. The Astros are pitching. That's Albert Pujols. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's got 600-something home runs. Crazy, crazy good baseball player. And this is Brad Lidge. So this is in the playoffs. They're right before the World Series. And so it's game five, and Houston's up. They're winning. They're up 3-1 in the series. And it's the top of the ninth. The game is tied. And so here comes Brad Lidge. He comes in to save the game. He's an all-star this year. He's the man. He's like ascending. He's like this skyrocketing, ascending closer in the league. He's doing awesome. Everybody loves him. He's doing great. 40-something saves, all-star this year. And then he comes up against this buzzsaw named Albert Pujols. All right, so go ahead and give it to us. Can you start it again? Hold on, pause it real quick. I want you to watch what happens to this guy. I was watching this live, okay? This is one of the reasons why I love baseball. Albert Pujols took his soul, like just took all the life out of this pitcher. Watch what happens to this guy. Watch what happens to him. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bennett. That's good. Like, he just took the life right out of Brad Lidge. Just right out of him. All the wind is knocked out of him. Before this, Brad Lidge was awesome. I mean, he was fantastic. So his save percentage that year, 91%. It went downhill after that. It went down to 84 and then 70%. In the World Series, so the next game, they ended up winning. Astros go to the World Series. What does Brad Lidge do? Gives up two saves. He gives up two saves. They lost the series 4-0. He shows up, first game that he shows up in, gives up a home run. Ninth inning, walk off, game over. Like, his whole demeanor was gone. He absolutely got destroyed by this one pitch, and you could see it, you could watch it. He's an all-star in 05. They trade him. They don't even want him on the team in 07. They get him off to the Phillies. Baseball's an awesome game. You can absolutely demoralize somebody with one hit. That's amazing. It's an amazing game, but it's also a precise game. You have to be precise in the way that you play baseball. If Pujols swings just a little too soon, a little different, a little higher, a little lower, it's an out. It's a pop-up. He doesn't even hit the ball. If Brad Lidge throws that curveball where he's supposed to throw that curveball, it's a strike. If you miss by just a little bit, the game's very different. So, that's kind of like life. There's only a few ways to do something right. And there's about a million ways to do it wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, there's a lot of ways to mess things up, but there's only a few to do it right. This applies all over the place. 2 + 2 does not equal 5 or 6 or chicken. Right? Right? There's a lot of wrong answers you can give. You can smell a rose, but you can't smell the color purple. Not able to do that. If you want to go to, you can go all sorts of directions you want to go, but if you're trying to get to San Antonio, you don't go south on 37. Right? There's a lot of ways you can go wrong. There's only a few ways you can go right. Folks, Jesus didn't leave heaven to come here in order to tell us, hey, you guys look all right. You guys are doing well. Keep it up. Just keep doing what you're doing. This is good. I just wanted to see how everything was going down here. And it looks all right. He didn't go to the cross because he said, you know what? You guys are fine. There's no problems here. So I'll go to the cross and die for you. No, he came down from heaven to live a life for us, to die on a cross because things were wrong. Things were problematic because we were devastated. We were headed for destruction. There's a lot of ways we could go wrong. There's only a few ways we can go right. Last week, we covered three concepts in verses 6 and verses 7 through 11 and verse 12 there in Matthew chapter 7. Namely, don't throw your pearls before swine. Ask and it will be given to you. And we talked about the golden rule. And with that verse 12 there, he has closed his conversation that he's had on the law. He's been talking about the law and the prophets. And now he's going to move to the close of his sermon in the rest of chapter 7. Now he's going to end it. He's going to land it. He's going to land his plane. So he's already laid out clearly how off course his people are from where the Father wants them to be. We talked about that. They're way off course. God doesn't just want us looking good on the outside, right? He wants us to really be good on the inside. He wants us to be pure. We're not just to do good things. We're to do them with the right motivation, with the right intention. We're not just supposed to avoid bad things. We're also supposed to have pure hearts on the inside. Now Jesus is going to move to make clear how serious our situation is. How serious is it that he has to show up to tell us where we really are? In a word, here's our situation: dire. Our situation is dire. We are in a life or death situation. So through the rest of the chapter, Jesus is going to warn against four horrifying outcomes. Four ways that you could go wrong, and you don't want to go wrong in these ways. Number one, joining the throngs of people, of humanity, that are heading toward destruction. Number two, the wolves that will sneak into God's community in order to devour. Number three, believing you are safely one of God's chosen people when in fact you are not. And number four, not having a foundation to withstand the coming catastrophe. Today we're going to cover that first one of those, and that's in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 7. Then next week we're going to cover the second and the third, and then we're going to finally finish up the Sermon on the Mount the following week with that fourth one. So today we're going to focus on how do we avoid joining the mass of humanity that is on the path to destruction. These passages, they are terribly significant, especially today's, and especially for those who are exploring the faith. Now, for many of you, you already know the Lord. You're already going to be all right. You're already on the narrow path heading towards life. But folks, this is vital for you to understand, to tell those that don't know the Lord, that are not on the right path, that are heading towards destruction. That is our purpose. That is the reason why God hasn't, once we got saved, how he hasn't taken us up to heaven already. Why? So that we can go share the gospel with the lost. That's why. And so that's why Amy and I are so excited about doing this Great Questions. So for somebody that is really wrestling with these questions, you want to get them coming to that. Because we want to talk it through with them. We want to help them wrestle through their issues so that they can hear clearly the gospel, so they can get onto the path of life. We want our church to be about that, not just in that event, but in everything that we do. And so, without further ado, let's go to Matthew chapter 7. We will read our passage for today, verses 13 and 14. This will probably be well known to many of you. Verse 13. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who will enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Jesus tells us there are two gates, two ways, two destinations, one choice. We should start with the destination. This isn't a trivial matter. Hey, do you want to go to the wide gate? Do you want to go to the narrow gate? Doesn't matter. I could go either one. No, this is life or destruction. That's what he says. That's the destination. You get to go to one or the other. And in the background, Jesus has already floated the idea of hell. And so that was already there in chapter 5. So that's still floating in this sermon. Destruction means hell here. There's a road to hell and there's a road to heaven. This is life or death. I mentioned that there is only one choice. I didn't say there was a lot of choices. And unfortunately, that choice isn't, hey, do I even get to choose? Do I get to choose which one that I am going to be on? Or do I even want to choose between the two? Can I just avoid both of these roads? No, you can't. You don't get to choose neither road. You don't have a choice in that. In fact, you're already on one of the paths. That's what he's saying here. Notice that the broad way, there are many who enter through it. But for the narrow path, he says, you have to find it, he says. You have to look for it. You have to seek it. It says nothing about finding or seeking the broad way. Why? Because you've already been placed in that way. You're already passed through the gate just by being alive. The choice isn't from a neutral place. You don't stand in a neutral place and say, all right, here's the bad way, the broad way, or here's the narrow way. Which one do I want to go on? When you are born sinful. You are descended from Adam. You enter into the broad way. That's where you are. And so the choice isn't from a neutral place. The choice is from one of the roads. Do I stay here or will I go to the other road? That is the choice. I'm already on the broad road. Will I get off to go on to the other one? This is really, really important. Jesus does not give a third option. He does not believe we are born in the middle, that we're kind of neutral. No, we're automatically on this wide, broad road. We are born dying on the way to death. And we are on that path because we are sinful. No one is a blank slate. We are born sinful, and we are on that road to destruction. You will always be frustrated or confused, folks, if you don't accept this first piece. Life is not going to make sense to you if you do not accept that you start out on the wrong side. Folks, your sins are your actions. They're yours. They are you. Not something or someone else. You sinned. You make mistakes. And you sin because that's what's most natural to you. It's not like this foreign thing that came upon you. Like you were totally pure and then all of a sudden you got corrupted and I don't know where the sin. No, you did that. Those things that you do that are sinful, that's coming deep from within inside of you. That's your nature and mine as well. You start here. So now here's the question. Why is the gate and why is the road so broad? Why is that the case? Did God make it that way? Did God say, hey, here's a big one going to hell. Here's a little one going to heaven. Did he design it that way because he's mean and he's terrible? No. It's likely broad because of two reasons. All right, so reason number one, it's made broad by the hordes of people stomping down the road. Think about where he is, what time he's living in. He's living in ancient Israel. If you had a road in ancient Israel, what was it? It was dirt. It was a path, right? So if you have a ton of people walking on a path, they're going to tramp a big, wide road. That's the way they're thinking. They don't have asphalt where you line it up. No, you have so many people on this road that it becomes broad. The second reason is because it is the road to destruction. It's the road to chaos. There are many ways to die. Because dying is chaos and chaos is easy. It's really easy to mess up. Without being morbid, and I don't want you to be morbid and don't overdo it, but think about how many ways you could actually die. Think about all the different ways that you could die. There's a lot of ways you could die, right? There's a whole lot of ways you could not be living anymore. Think about the kids with the Legos that we did with the tower and then building a tower and then me coming in, right? There's only a few ways that you can really make a tower. If you start throwing the pieces any which way, that's not being orderly. That's not building a tower. There's an infinite number of things I could have done with the Legos that wouldn't build the tower or could destroy it. There's only a few ways that you can actually build a tower. So the way is narrow. Yes, because there are fewer people, that's true, but also because order, which produces life, is precise. How precise do we have to be to stay alive? Let's think about that. You get in a car, you get on a freeway. How precise do you have to drive to stay alive? Going 75. Do you have to be real precise, or could you be, I'm just going to drive however I feel like driving? I could drive like this. I'm the master of my own life. How's that going to go? Do you have to drive on the right side of the road? You do if you want to stay alive, right? What about eating? How precise do you have to be with what you eat? You know, I'm not going to eat this month. I'm just not going to do that. I'm thirsty. What do we have to drink? Rat poison? Sweet, I'm going to try to do that. No, you have to be precise. We lose sight of what this is because we get used to eating. We've got lots of things that we can eat. There's a whole lot of things that we should not eat, right? Whole lot of things we should not eat. We have to eat 3 times a day, typically, you know? And yeah, we're going to fast and things like that, but you eat 3 times a day at least. So we have to be precise to stay just to stay alive. There are things that we have to do to make that work. How precise do our societies need to be? Let's make a society, but let's not have firemen or policemen. How's that gonna go? Let's all be professional athletes. Let's all go play baseball and let's make our society that way. How's that gonna work? It's not. Order and life require precision. Have to be narrow. That's the way the world and the universe operates. Order unattended dissolves into chaos. If you leave something that's orderly alone, it dissolves into chaos. You know this. So someone may say, hey, God is evil for putting us on that road. How can he put us on that road? Wait a minute. First off, no, he didn't put you on that road. God didn't put you on that road. Adam put you on that road. Adam rebelled. He put us on the road to destruction. But God allowed it, you could say. Yes, he did. But he would only be culpable if he is forcing us to stay on the road. We start on that road, and if God said, yeah, you got to stay on that road to hell. I'm not going to let you out of here. You got to stay there. Then God would be culpable. But that's not what he does he? He doesn't want you to stay on the road. And in fact, here he's commanding you, get on, enter the narrow gate. Get on the right gate. Get out of here. Get away from that. That's what God is telling you. He's even commanding you to do that. So yes, he allows you to come in, but he offers a way for you to get out. He offers a way for you to enter into this narrow gate. And then someone may say, but it's not fair. It's just not fair. Why is there only one gate? Why can't there be more? Why can't all these other religions be fine? Why can't I just live the way I want to? Why does there have to be just one gate? Why does it have to be so exclusive? All right, pause right here for a moment. Why does there have to be more than one way of escape? Why is that better than having a way of escape? What actually makes that better? That's like if it's flooded and you're stranded on top of your house, right? You have, like, so much water, you got to be on top of your house. And so you're crying out to God and you're praying, God, please help me, save me. And so the emergency dispatchers, they find you and they send a canoe out to you and you say, yeah, isn't there another way? Can we get something else out here? So the dispatcher sends out a motorboat and they come and they're ready to get you. And you're like, I just don't know if I want to take this one. So they send a helicopter. How many of these do you want sent to you before you take the way out? You have a way out. That's enough. Why do we need another one? This is life or death. Take the escape route that's offered to you. Don't just sit back and go, I just wish there was another way I'd not die. What is that? Someone came to save you and you're like, I don't know. I don't know about this way. I think I'll just wait, try something else. I think I'll get a better offer of saving my life a little later on. It doesn't make sense, folks. There's a way to get out. What else do you want? You know, it's one thing to be stuck in a bad situation. So let's say we're all in one of those horror movies. It's Halloween coming up. We're in one of those horror movies. And we're all, like, there's a monster coming, and we're all trying to debate what's going to happen. And this person's saying one way, and this person's saying another way. And this, you know, and so we all have all these ideas, and we can look at each other and say, well, why is your idea better than my idea to get out of here, right? That makes sense. I get that. Like, person to person, how do we know what each other, which of us has the right idea? I get that. Here's the problem, though. If God shows up and he says, this is the way to get out, don't go down into the basement with all the chainsaws, and you're like, well, who are you to tell us what to do? That's a problem. That doesn't work very well. Okay, this is what people are like sometimes when they are offered a way out, right? It's like they're in the horror movie and you're there with a guy that's British and there's a car there that's ready to go and you can get out. But the British guy, he gets in the passenger seat because he's used to driving on the other side, and the steering wheel and all the controls are on that side. And he gets in the car and he's like, I wasn't expecting this. Why didn't they put the steering wheel over here? Why didn't they put the controls where I thought they would be? They're supposed to be over here. And instead of getting in the other seat and driving away, they just complain that it's not the way that they wanted it to be. Okay, if you find yourself in that situation, just get in the seat. That works. If it's not what you expected, so what? Get out of there before the peril gets you. Stop trying to worry about, like, hey, it's not the way I wanted it to be. You don't need to be in control if you're being saved. You understand that? You don't need to be in control of that situation. Get over it. Adapt to the reality. Change, and you're going to live. Now, for those who are on the narrow road, hey, congratulations. You're on the narrow road. You're heading towards life. That's awesome. You can let your soul rest knowing you're safe, man. You're safe. You're loved. But it's also worth noting who Jesus was talking to. He was talking to a crowd of religious people. He was talking to a bunch of people that thought they were safe. So look, I don't want anyone in here who is saved to feel bad or to feel worried or feel like they're in trouble. Okay? I don't want any of you who are believers and you are saved to worry about your salvation at all. No need to do that. But I also want to be clear that there's a possibility that there may be people in here that think they're fine, but are not actually on the right way. And for you, it's imperative for you, if that's you, and I don't know, I'm not judging, I'm not making any case of that. But religious people need to be clear that just because you're religious doesn't mean you're saved. You need to check yourself and see, am I actually on the right way? Am I on the right path? And so, please check your heart. Especially with how I'm going to talk about what it means to be on the narrow path and what it means to be there. Please check your heart and make sure that you are on the right path. Next week, we're going to cover some of the same stuff. Some of the same stuff is going to come up, so I'm not going to dive into it too deep because we're going to go to it a little bit next week. But so let me move on here. Now, if anyone wants to balk and say, hey, that the way isn't really broad. There's not a whole lot of people that are actually on the road to destruction. That we're all kind of heading in the right direction. That every religion is fine and it doesn't matter what you believe. If someone says that to you, send them back to chapter 5. You guys remember chapter 5 and how hard that was? Send them back to chapter 5 and see how many people are actually fitting within what Jesus says is safe. How many people are avoiding being angry and lustful? How many people are loving their enemies? Is it a broad road of people that are actually doing that? Or is it a broad road of people that, even though they look good on the outside, are wicked on the inside? You have to grapple with that if you're going to say, no, the road's not that broad to destruction. Get past what Jesus says there in chapter 5 and then come talk to me. Look, people can get lost in the questions, right? You can get lost in the questions. Why is the way broad? Why does it have to be broad? Did God make it that way? You can get lost in all of that, right? But let's not obscure what this is really about. Let's be really clear about what this is really about. Yes, order unintended dissolves into chaos. But there's another fact here. Love acts the same way as order does. Love unattended turns into chaos. Why is that? Because order actually comes from love. God, the triune God, existed in love, and out of love, he created order. He created the creation. He brought order out of chaos because he loves. And so order mirrors love in this way. So why does order turn into chaos? Because if you don't attend to it, it turns into that way. The same way that love is. If you love somebody or something, but you stop attending to it, that goes to chaos. The love diminishes. It goes away. Here's what that means. Love is narrow. In this age, at least, love is narrow. To give love requires focus. Let me prove that to you. All right, so back in the day, I'm in high school. I'm dating a girl. We go out on a date. We had been dating for some time. We had gotten to that time where you get comfortable, right? So we go out to a restaurant. And baseball again. Randy Johnson is with the Diamondbacks. I love me some Diamondbacks. Love me some Randy Johnson. So we're there at dinner. And on the TV over her right shoulder, Randy Johnson is throwing a game. Where am I paying attention during that date? I was watching the game. Do you think my girlfriend liked that at all? No. Who is she to tell me not to watch the game? No. Why did she have an absolute right to tell me, you're not paying attention to me. Why? Because I'm saying that I'm affectionate with you and I like you. And so if you do, Nigel, then what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to pay attention to her. You're supposed to be looking at her. You're supposed to be conversing with her, not a television playing a game, right? How great did she feel in that moment? Not very good. This is why love requires attentive focus, narrow focus. That's how love works. Your eyes direct your attention. I'm not paying attention to what's behind me. Even in my peripheral, I'm not really paying attention. I'm paying attention to what I look at. That's the way it works. You are not attending to just anything, only what you focus on. Here's what Jesus is telling us, that if we love anything but God, we are on the broad road. Do you hear that? If you are loving something other than God, rather than loving something through your love of God, right? You're allowed to love things so long as that's coming from your love of God. But if you love something instead of God, you are on the broad road. You're loving all those things. But if we want to love God, we don't get to watch baseball over his shoulder. You have to be looking at him, paying attention to him, giving him love. We don't get to look at other things. We look at him. We love him. Go back to Deuteronomy. We had a whole series on Deuteronomy. This is going to sound familiar to you. Deuteronomy 5, 7 through 8. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol. Ten Commandments. That's where he starts. He starts with that. Deuteronomy 6, verse 5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Deuteronomy 4, 24. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. That's the way God is. Because he's jealous for your affection. And if you're paying attention to other things, if you have an idol in your life, if you love something more than God, then your eyes are there, your focus is there, and your love is there, and it's not on God because your love is narrow. So don't let any speculation about the details of these gates and these ways distract you. There's no escape hatch. This is reality. Adapt to this reality. Do you love God? Does he have your affectionate attention? He's merciful and he's compassionate and he offers you another way where you can be with him. You don't have to go to the road of destruction, and neither do your friends and neither do your family. There's a million ways you can go wrong, but there's one way to go right. You have to love God. Folks, it takes no effort to float downstream, to go with the masses of people that are going naturally. But if you want to get out of that stream, if you want to go upstream, if you want to not go to death, you want to go to life, you have to intentionally focus your eyes on the Lord. This begs the question, why is it so hard to love God, to fight upstream, to find that narrow road? Here's why it's hard. It's because it requires giving up your most prized possession. God gave you a free will, a choice. He gave that to you. That is how you determine your life. All the things that you love, that you choose to go do. Where does that come from? It comes from the fact that you have a will. And what is God asking you to do? To give up that very will, the determination of your life. For you to be the captain, for you to give that up of your life and to say, no, God, you are now in charge. You have control of my life. You determine everything about me and everything that I choose. That is your most prized possession. But if you give that up, you are giving love to God. When I give up my Saturdays for my family, what am I doing? I'm giving up my freedom, my choice to go do whatever I feel like doing so that I can give that to my family because I love them. That's how God feels. He wants you. He wants the deepest part of you. He wants your choice. He wants your will. So please swim against the stream. Find the narrow gate, which last week we saw will be found. It's a promise. You will find it if you seek it. So flee from destruction. But there's something more, right? We don't just want to flee from hell. You hear this all the time, like, I got saved because I didn't want to go to hell. That's great. That's awesome. You didn't want to go to hell. But there's something more. There's something awesome on the other side of that. There's life. Moreover, there's God. There's Christ who gave up his life for you. He loves you. Run towards him, not just away from hell. Run towards Christ. This narrow road is about love. First off, that God was merciful to us, and he sent his son for us. There is love to be found on the narrow road, folks. God wants to be found and wants to give you love and deems your love worthy of receiving. Have you ever thought about that? God deems your love worthy of him receiving. He seeks it. He wants it. I love my wife. And I love my daughters. And when I'm with them, they get my full attention. So right now, Holland, she's young, right? She's super young. But man, when we get together and I'm holding her and we're playing and I have her eyes and she has mine, magic. Fireworks. It's everything. That's my baby. That's my girl. When I'm with her, that's all I want to do. Because that's life. When I'm with Kendi and we're joking around and I got her laughing and she's got me laughing and we're having fun, am I looking around? Am I going over doing something? No, I'm like here. I'm right here. I'm focused. I'm looking right at my daughter. We're enjoying life together. When Amy and I go on a date, I learned my lesson back in high school. All right, I'm not looking over her shoulder. I'm not doing any. She has my attention because I want her to have my love. And I want to receive her love. Guess what, folks? God is staring at you. He's looking right at you. His attention is not divided. He sent his son, not to come down and say, hey, everything's fine. No, he sent his son when you were an enemy. Guess where his attention was when his son was here? It's on you. It's on you. Because he loves you. He gave everything for you. So, congratulations if you're saved and you're on the narrow road and you're going to go to heaven. But how about in the meantime, we spend our time looking at God. We spend our time locked, eyes together, paying attention to him, his will, his love for us, and our love for him. That's life. There's love there for you. So don't be distracted. Stop looking at Randy Johnson over his shoulders. Pay attention to him. Give him his love. And he will give it back to you. Please join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, your love was costly. You gave up your son for us. You know how much I love my daughters, and you know how much I love my wife, and you know how much I would hate to give them up, and you did that willingly for us because your attention and your focus was on us. And it was like that when we were lost. We were on the broad road. We didn't start in the narrow and fall. We started on the broad road. We started sinful. We started wicked. I started wicked. But you saved us. So Lord, please take our love. Receive what we give to you. Take our hearts, Lord, and grab our attention and our focus and allow us to focus on the one thing that matters, and that's you. Take away the distractions and the other things that pull us away and the many ways that we can falter and fall. And may we do that so that you receive the glory and the honor and your name is magnified above all others and that you have our hearts. Amen.